Good afternoon and welcome to your own health and fitness. I'm Lena Berman and I'm here live with you on Tuesdays at noon talking to you about healthcare and fitness trends and taking your calls. It's real nice to be back in the studio again after last week's storm. It was very, very strange doing a show by telephone. Very odd. Today's show is called Different Approaches to Homeopathy, and I have two guests with me in the studio. Nicola Henriquez, author and principal lecturer at the Institute of Classical Homeopathy, and Dana Ullman, author, instructor, and spokesperson for homeopathic medicine, will be going as usual till 12:30 and then taking your phone calls. I don't want to take time away from today's show by doing one of my usual exercise editorials because we have a lot of material to discuss. But next week, I'll be doing my monthly exercise show alone, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about what's on your mind in regard to exercise. As usual, if people want to schedule an appointment with me for diet or exercise consultations or to order a tape of today's show or to get a list of available tapes, you can call my office during the week, and that number is 707-769-1458, and I'll repeat this again at the end of the show. Let me just get right into the show now and introduce my two guests. A former journalist drawn to homeopathy while researching an article, Nicola Henriquez is the principal lecturer at the Institute of Classical Homeopathy, located in Tiburon with administrative offices in Santa Helena. Before arriving in California, she had both a private and national health service practice in London. Ms. Henriquez received her degree at the London College of Classical Homeopathy. She's the author of two books on health issues, Menopause, the Woman's View, and Hysterectomy, the Woman's View. Both of these books are published by Quartet in London, and my understanding is that they are available through the Institute of Classical Homeopathy, and we will give out the number and the phone number for that sort of probably right before break. So get out your paper and pencils for that kind of information. Dana Ullman is widely recognized as one of the foremost spokespersons for homeopathic medicine in the United States. He's right here in Berkeley. He has authored five books, including The Consumer's Guide to Homeopathy, which is his new book, and Discovering Homeopathy, Medicine for the 21st Century. He's also co-authored two other books, Homeopathic Medicines for Children and Infants, and Everybody's Guide to Homeopathic Medicines. He's a lecturer at the University of California in San Francisco at their Med Center. I want to welcome both of you, and thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. I asked both of you to join me today because as a consumer of homeopathic remedies, I'm still confused by the differences between the two approaches that are available to us here in the U.S. Remedies are readily available to us in stores, and there is an enormous range of practitioners who call themselves homeopaths, although some of them seem to be proceeding in what I think is less than a scientific manner. I actually think the two of you are more similar in your approach than different, but I'd like to give our listeners enough information so that they can protect themselves in the face of these choices. I'd like to start by discussing the science of homeopathy, including its body of research, so that we can establish it as credible to those few listeners who have not had experience with it. So either one of you, if you could give us a little bit of some background and give us some sense of how it's been studied.
Well, if I'd like to kick off, I think what's one of the things that I want to put across about classical homeopathy is that it's not mysterious, it's not magic, and it's not new. What it is a complete system of healing. It is a lot of common sense applied practically. It's founded on laws of nature, and also it's practiced according to, unfortunately, not as clearly understood, but very clearly defined principles, scientific principles laid down by Dr. Samuel Hahnemann when he developed the system. So it's been around for 200 years to start with. And the thing is that what I'd like to do is I'd just like to run through the principles because I think people misunderstand about homeopathy. They think that it's this and that. So if people could perhaps take some time and I'll just run through the principles carefully. The first is that homeopaths view the living organism in a particular way. We view it as a whole entity and not as a separate bits and parts. We also believe in the existence of something called the vital force. And the best way to understand the vital force is to remember that when you see a corpse and when you see a living organism, there is somewhat of a difference in that. And the difference is the vital force. That proves to us that there is something called the vital force, the life force.
So similar to what the Chinese, in Chinese medicine, called qi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. The next thing to consider, that homeopaths consider, is that there is a susceptibility. There's susceptibility in all of us as individuals, and that means that we are susceptible to internal and external stimuli, and we interact in the universe according to those stimuli. But it's all very individual. Now, along with that susceptibility, which makes us vulnerable or not vulnerable to particular disorders, it also means that we are susceptible to the medicines, which, of course, is particularly important to us as homeopaths. Then the other thing, one of the other principles, important principles, is an understanding that each of us is alive and carries out our lives according to hereditary predispositions. And that's one thing that's very important. We have, inherited particular disorders that make us vulnerable, and also who we are is part of that heredity. And that is something which we focus on as classical homeopaths. Now, those first three principles, the vital force, susceptibility, and the predisposition, sometimes called miasms, are as one unit. And it's very important. So as classical homeopathy believes that that is one unit, that is all those things, all those principles and factors are the human being. That is what a human being is. So now we come to the homeopathic medicines and how they are administered. And that, of course, is the thing that's very well known, something called the law of similars, which wasn't just sprung up by Hahnemann. It was, in fact, stated as long ago as 500 BC. And Hippocrates said, through the like, disease is produced. Through the application of the like, it is cured. So we practice according to the law of similars, which means that medicines which induce symptoms in a patient can also cure a patient by inducing similar symptoms. The difference being that with a homeopathic remedy, the artificial disease, which is what is imposed on the organism, is in fact stronger and therefore annihilates the original one. So maybe we'll just leave it there for a minute, and maybe Dana can have a go now.
Sure. Yeah, please
I'll just expand on what she's begun so well, really. Part of the basis of understanding homeopathy is actually at the basis of modern physiology, and that is that symptoms of illness are not just something wrong with the person, but symptoms are adaptive tendencies, are adaptive efforts of the organism to try and defend itself and to try and respond to infection or stress. From that perspective, then, instead of using conventional pharmacological agents which control, manage, or suppress a particular symptom or group of symptoms, in homeopathy we look for a substance that mimics that. And that's where lies the logic of the homeopathic principle of similars, is to mimic that wisdom of the body. What I'll tie into right now is your initial question about where is the science behind homeopathy. It's actually in two places. One, right in the heart of homeopathy, and that is that all of our medicines, in order for us to determine what they are good for, we do experiments on human subjects, not on animals, to determine what a substance actually causes an overdose. These are studies which are called drug provings, but they just as well may be considered studies in toxicology. In fact, our books, our Materia Medica, provide the most detailed toxicological information known today on the planet. They don't have dose response curves in the books, but they simply have the data, the physical, emotional, and mental symptoms that various plants, minerals, animals, and chemicals cause an overdose. We use this information because then when patients come to us with a constellation of symptoms, not just a, quote, a migraine headache, because your migraine headache will be different than mine. Okay. Your arthritis will be different than my arthritis. And even that particular disease label is only one part of this overall disease that Nikki was mentioning. So in homeopathy, we look for a substance in nature that would mimic the various symptoms that you have. And just as an immunization works on this principle of similars to augment the body's own defenses to deal with a particular pathogen, when a medicine is prescribed based on the totality of the person, it has the capacity to augment the body's overall immune and defense system. And I say overall immune and defense system, that's another way of making reference to the more spiritual term, which is the vital force.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned, the issue of proving a remedy, and it's an important issue because it is the case that, I mean, I was going to mention this further down into the interview, but it's worth mentioning now that one of the things that gets dicey is that if a homeopath is practicing in a way that is, shall we say, eclectic, for lack of a better term, or if they're just not very well tuned to the patient, they can, in fact, diagnose a remedy for someone that isn't a good remedy for them. And if they hammer away, if they use a different approach other than the classical approach, which is, I believe, to give a single dose, if they continue to dose the patient, they will prove the remedy. But that said, although it may induce symptoms, the amount of substance that's being given is a tremendously dilute amount. So we're not actually putting people at risk the way we do with traditional Western medicine.
That's right. I mean, if one of the principles that we're talking about is the provings, and this is further evidence that these homeopathic medicines have biological action, is that they not only have the power, when used in therapeutic doses, to heal people, but in continual doses, they can and will cause certain patterns of symptoms, but that will abate when you stop taking the remedy. So it's not really a serious problem.
You're not
problem.
Poisoning yourself, in other words, because these are so dilute. I mean, that's been one of the problems in proving to Western docs that homeopathy is viable, is that they look at the amount of solution that's involved, and they say it's not possible for people to react to this. Yeah. Okay, so given that, and given the fact that we have an approach which is a classical approach, and then we have a more eclectic approach available, you can go into a health food store, you can get books, you can read up on remedies, and you can self-treat. I'm wondering, Nikki, what your problem is with people doing that, using remedies in that way. What is your concern?
Well, I think what you have to understand is that most people wouldn't self-treat, for example, with allopathic medicines. They do in an acute situation, but if there was something seriously wrong with them, they wouldn't just attempt to buy drugs over the counter and try to treat themselves with some kind of chronic disorder. Okay.
Well,
they do buy some.
There's a whole large
body of over-the-counter drugs.
Yeah. But if for example, you had a serious pathological disorder, then what you would do is you'd consult a doctor.
Yes. That's right.
That's the point I'm trying to make.
I agree with you totally. Right.
Okay, so part of what we're saying here is that your concern is that if someone is really quite ill, mm-hmm. really, really quite ill, mm-hmm. that they not attempt to self-treat. But what about, I have an upset stomach, I have a bit of a flu coming on, and I read either the Material Medica
sure.
or something, and I go, oh, well, you know, this resonates with me.
Sure. The thing is that the secret of homeopathy is that why the medicines work is that what we use in analyzing a case is the characteristic symptoms that the individual experiences. As Dana said earlier, we've all got headaches, but they're going to be different to a greater or lesser degree in what caused them, in how long they last, in what makes them better and worse. And those are the things that make a difference between one medication and another. It may not sound very much, but when you think about the vital force as being something that's very unique and very sensitive, a tiny amount of differentiation is going to make all the difference as to whether or not the homeopathic remedy is going to be effective or not. And you can do pretty well by going in and buying over-the-counter. You will achieve some success to some degree. But if you went and you sought help from a homeopath, you would have a much better result. So it's fine to an extent.
So part of what we're saying here is that one of the things that's valuable in seeing someone who is well trained is that depending on their degree of sensitivity, and there's no way you can, I mean, ultimately when you choose a healthcare provider, you know, it's buyer beware anyway. You still have to find someone that you resonate with. You still have to sense that they're seeing you accurately. But within that range, what you're saying is that somebody who's been trained should be able to see subtleties and nuances in the totality of who you are, because part of what you do when you diagnose is that you look at not only how the person is feeling, but their psychological state, their medical history, their dietary history. You know, it's, as you said, holistic. So part of what you're saying is that one of the things that you're concerned with is that people when they self-treat may not have enough experience or enough background to be accurate in terms of choosing.
Yes. Sure. Let's take, for example, a baby who has colic, which is a very common symptom, okay? We had a case in the clinic the other day, and many babies experience colic. So as a homeopath, you wouldn't be particularly interested in the pain. What you'd be very interested in is what that particular individual actually finds as improves their situation. And it wasn't obvious because the baby was only 4 months old, so I couldn't really have a good conversation or take a verbal case history. But what I did was I observed that when the mother picked up the baby, what made the baby better was the fact that the baby hung over the mother's arm as the baby was being carried around the room, and this pacified the baby. And so my recommendation for a medication would cover that modality, that thing that actually improved the situation. Not just just the regular sort of chamomilla, which is often given for babies with colic.
Sure. But many self-care books, including those that I've written, teach people that there are certain remedies that have certain patterns of symptoms and other remedies that have other patterns of symptoms. And people can learn to treat themselves and their family for some of these acute types of conditions, colic, teething, even earaches. Of course, when people have chronic ailments, Even allergies or headaches, where you have recurrent types of things, you can learn to treat yourself for the acute episode, but let me tell you, you are better off going to a professional homeopath when you have recurrent types of complaints, because whereas the acute remedies may alleviate the condition temporarily, going to a professional homeopath has the potential and commonly experienced occurrence of not just relief, but underlying cure. And that's the real benefit of seeking professional and classical homeopathy.
Okay, let me just ID the show again. For those of you who are just tuning in, this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman on KPFA. We're doing a show live in the studios of KPFA with Nicola Henriquez and Dana Ullman, and the show is about different approaches to homeopathy. And let's continue. The main thing that I see here that is confusing for me, and I do use homeopathic remedies, is that there are, as I said, homeopaths, whether you self-treat or not, there are homeopaths who are treating who are not classically trained. So there is a differential in the way that people are administering doses of remedies. If I understand it correctly, in the classical tradition, you're giving a dose one time. And in the more eclectic style, I have seen practitioners dose people over a long period of time with frequency. Now, what I understood talking to you, Nikki, on the phone before we did the show is that the disadvantage to over-treating is that you can overstimulate or you can sort of destroy the very thing that you're trying to do. In other words, if you're trying a little less is more in this situation, if you overdo it, you're going to actually have this thing sort of not be effective or turn it around in a certain way. I'm not saying this very scientifically, but let me get to my point. The point I'm trying to make here is it seems to be rather easy to antidote a remedy. And most of us are going to use some toothpaste. We're going to put a breath mint in our mouths once in a while. And God forbid, during the winter, we might have a cup of coffee in the morning. So that's the part that makes me nuts.
Okay. Well, now, I'm one of those funny practitioners who doesn't believe in an antidoting in the way that you have
stated. Oh, good.
Yes,
good.
Right. Neither do I.
Oh, goody, goody, goody. Okay. Tell me it's okay to drink coffee once in a while.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what I do, you know. And I mean, why pick mint? Why pick parsley? You know, why don't you pick cucumbers and say it's going to antidote? I mean,
all right,
it doesn't
so let's
make
talk
any sense.
About that. What's the deal with this?
That's a myth, first of all.
Oh,
a lot
God,
of people,
I'm so glad
a lot of
this.
People feel it's been written by some homeopaths, even sometimes many homeopaths, that coffee and camphor and mint antidote homeopathic medicines. What I have found is that when people have headaches or insomnia or restless states that mimic a coffee state, these people are sensitive to coffee. And so when you give them a remedy that benefits them, and then they drink their cup of coffee, which aggravates their original condition, it's not that coffee antidotes the remedy, it just makes their situation worse. So, you know, generally when people go to professional homeopaths, I'm not in practice, by the way. I do want to make that clear. I'm a writer, publisher,
you're
educator.
In book. You're in bookist.
That's right. So, you know, do you have anything else to say about this, Nikki?
Yeah, I really want to hear. I want to hear a lot about this.
Well, this is the thing, you know, when patients come into the clinic, you know, the one thing they say is, you're not going to make me give up anything, are you, for heaven's sake? You know? And I say, well, you know, this particular homeopath, as I said, doesn't believe in that kind of thing. if you make a good prescription, if you get the right potency, if it's the right remedy, it's going to work, okay? But as Dana rightly says, if you have a patient and through questioning it becomes apparent that the patient is actually sensitive to coffee because they say, if you ask me to give up coffee, I'm going to have a bit of a problem with it, okay? And it does affect me in a particular way, then it's common sense to know that that patient is actually sensitive to that substance. So it's common sense, again, to say, listen, you know, while you're on a homeopathic remedy, just, you know, for 3 months, just so that I can get a free entry into your particular problem, just lay off it for 3 months, okay?
Yeah, well, this is not so different from what I do with a client when they say, when I maybe suggest to them that they try not eating wheat for every meal, and they suddenly go, oh, and then I say, okay, so this is a trigger food for you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good reason to, like, try not to have it for a while.
Mm-hmm. But okay. you shouldn't say right across the board, you've got to give up, you know, change
life.
The toothpaste.
Oh, yeah. Life. That's
life.
Right.
No,
you know,
life.
That's it.
Can't have it. No
that's
music.
It.
You can't watch television. It'll antidote the remedy.
One thing that you need to know, too, is that right now around 40% of the French public use homeopathic medicines, and 39% of French doctors do. Believe me, if coffee was a serious problem, antidoting homeopathic medicines, in that cafe society, homeopathy would be used by negative 8% of the people.
You're making a lot of people very happy today. Okay, so going back to establish a little bit of a protocol here, one of the things that we're saying is you have a symptom, you take a homeopathic remedy, and it makes you feel better. So for God's sake, stop. Don't take it again, right?
Well, you see, that's the thing. It's not like anything. It's not a good idea just to treat one symptom, okay?
Uh-huh.
See, what you discover as a homeopath is that when somebody says, if it's not, I'm talking about something that isn't an acute situation, all right, but they've had it for a while, the chances are they say, you know, I'm coming with, let's say, you know, night sweats. Well, that's fine. You know, we know when that's likely to happen. But the chances are they're going to say that they come with a package of other symptoms. And classical homeopathy takes that whole package. It's called taking the totality of the individual, okay? And that leads us, that totality is the identification mark. It's like the blueprint, the fingerprint. It's the difference between one individual and another, because homeopathy really is the only medicine that totally focuses on the individuality of the individual.
Yeah,
okay,
totally.
It's an individualistic medication.
Well, acupuncture and Ayurveda, when done well, you know, many systems of medicine do that. Even conventional medicine can do that, though it is a little bit more difficult with conventional medicine. Yeah.
Okay, let's go to the other thing that frightens people, which is crisis cures.
Crisis cures.
No?
The healing crisis.
Healing crisis.
Or sometimes called the aggravation. What
aggravation.
We observe in homeopathy, especially when you go to a professional homeopath, and especially when the homeopath uses some of the more high-potency medicines, which means they've gone through this potentization process even more. In homeopathy, once a medicine has been gone through a serial dilution process, in other words, diluted 1 to 10 and shaken, diluted 1 to 10 and shaken, and that's done 200 times or 1,000 or 10,000 or 50,000 times, we find that the more a substance is potentized, the longer it acts, the deeper it acts, and the less doses are necessary. Now, we also know that sometimes the lower potencies can and will act deeply, but this is just a generalization. And so sometimes when homeopaths use these higher potencies, these more dilute and more potentized medicines, sometimes there is a healing crisis, a temporary worsening of symptoms. The vast majority of times, this is very good evidence that the person is responding well to the remedy, and they're going through. That's why it's even called a healing crisis. Of course, to the patient, it's called an aggravation, but what is actually going on is a person is improving. And sometimes going through hell and damnation in the process.
Well, and trying to go through hell and damnation when you're trying to work in the world is difficult.
The secret in classical homeopathy and going to, you know, a classical homeopath is that we sign up to something in the Organon, okay, that Hahnemann said, you know, the point of what we're all doing as practitioners, and that is to heal rapidly and gently and permanently. Now, the operative word here is gently. We've talked about an aggravation. There are different kinds of aggravation. What you don't want is an aggravation of the pathology. What you do want, because it indicates that the remedy is correct, is an aggravation, to some extent, of your original symptoms that you presented at the time of the consultation, because that tells us that you're on the right remedy because it's working. Now, the skill, this is where the skill of a homeopath comes in, is in the choice of the potency, because it's our objective to choose a potency which will cause you the least, as you say,
thank you,
healing aggravation.
Mm.
absolutely minimize
it. Listening to people.
Which is why you minimize, you take a minimum dose, a single remedy, it's all so that you heal gently. That's what we sign up to as homeopaths.
Yeah.
That's in the very first paragraph of Hahnemann's book, The Organon, and it's he talks about it as the primary mission of a physician is, in that way, to cure.
Lactose intolerant people like me, is there any problem holding pellets under your tongue for a shorter amount of time? I understand that the remedy is coating the pellets and that you can get it quickly. Is it better to put it in water?
I mean, exactly. You can
do
put
the
it
water,
in water
thing and swirl it?
Yes, that's
And that's
right.
the preferred, and you swirl it about 100 times?
Well, it depends what it is. I mean, sometimes you just put a few granules in a glass, you know, of some water, and then you just swallow it all. I mean, it doesn't really
take
matter,
a couple sips, that's
yeah,
all.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Don't make homeopathy too hard.
That's it.
It's
not.
Well, you have to forgive me. I actually have seen a couple of homeopaths who are not classical in their approach. And in one case, they did prove a remedy, and I was quite ill for several months. So it's made me rather nervous about seeing someone. So, you know, and to that end, my last question to you before we move, we've only got a second, is how do people protect themselves? How do you choose a practitioner? I mean, you're vulnerable when you go, and we all are.
Well, yeah, you're vulnerable when you seek any type of health care, medical care, whatnot. The best thing to do, it's amazing how little time and attention people give to choosing their own healer. They put more energy into looking at Consumer Reports for a better stereo than their own doctor or healer. So I recommend talking to other people, not just getting directories which are available through my company others.
No. In fact, I did. I got referrals. But I think maybe if I were going to suggest to people, I think the critical thing is that not only are they saying that they hear you, but in fact, as they're treating you, you have a sense that they are still hearing you.
Yes. The thing is that you should ask whether or not they practice according to the principles. That's the key phrase to use. They'll either know what you're talking about or not. And if they don't know what you're talking about by
run
the principles,
in the opposite direction.
Then run in the opposite direction.
Yeah. Well, here's what I said in my book, The Consumer's Guide to Homeopathy, which just came out last week, so I'm quite excited about it. But I encourage people to seek care of a homeopath who specializes in homeopathy. If they do 18 different therapies, unlikely they're very knowledgeable of homeopathy. I also prefer constitutional and classical homeopathy, but what I have found, because I'm in touch with so many people, hundreds and thousands of people, that not everyone gets benefit from classical homeopathy. So if you go to one classical homeopath, try then to switch homeopaths, go to another classical homeopath.
A little
and then, as a third choice,
a little pricey.
As a third choice, is then experiment with unconventional types of homeopathy. Because no system of healing is, you know, foolproof, and you know, you do need to experiment. And there's much more that I say in my book that I can't get into right now.
Not now. We're going to take a brief musical break. You can join us by calling us right now at 510-848-4425 if you have some questions about homeopathy, which is our subject for today. 510-848-4425. Call us right now. This is Lena Berman. This is your own health and fitness talk show, and we will be right back. Welcome back. This is your own health and fitness talk show. I'm Lena Berman. I'm here in the studio with Nicola Henricas and Dana Ullman, and we are doing a show where we're discussing different approaches to homeopathy. We're taking your phone calls right now at 510-848-4425. Now, if you are holding, be sure to turn your radio down before we take you. In addition, I'd like now for everyone to go and get your paper and pencil. I want both of our guests to give out numbers for where they are and where they can be reached and various things like that. I want to remind people that we're going to give this out now. This information will be at the front desk of KPFA. Please do not call my office for this information. You can get it from KPFA's front desk if you miss it off the radio. And so, with no further ado, Nicola, would you give out?
Okay, so the name of the organization I work for is the Institute of Classical Homeopathy. And the phone number where you can reach us is 707 963 7796.
Repeat that, please.
It's 707-963-7796.
And that's Nicola Henriquez. And her books also, there should be information available on her two books, Menopause, The Women's View, and Hysterectomy, The Women's View. So
that's right.
Okay. And that is a school.
It's a school, yeah.
Yes. And is it possible to get treated there? Or?
Yes, we do have a clinic that we run as for the students.
And is it a reduced rate clinic?
It's actually free. The thing is that at the moment we're booked up to the end of the year already because of that situation.
The end of 1995 or 1996?
1996, virtually.
Oh, wow.
And that's just...
Do you have referrals at the...
Certainly, yes.
Okay.
Yes,
all right.
Certainly.
Dana?
And my organization is Homeopathic Educational Services on Blake Street near Shattuck. Not too far from KPFA here. And the actual address is 2036 Blake Street. And our phone number, and if you don't get it now, we are listed under Homeopathic Educational Services.
In Berkeley.
Which is easy to remember, hopefully. And the phone number in the 510 area is 649-0294. That's 649-0294. And what Homeopathic Educational Services is America's leading resource center of homeopathic books, tapes, medicine, software, referrals, directories, homeopaths. Homeopathy are us really who and what
and
we are.
And Dana is surrounded by books here. We have his most recent book, The Consumer's Guide to Homeopathy. I will tell you that I have found Dana's books tremendously helpful personally, which is why I wanted to get him on the air. So I do recommend his books, and he has quite a few out there. Let's take some callers because I can. The lights are actually look like they're going to explode off the board. Let's take our first caller. You're on KPFA. Do you have a question today?
Hi, my name is Juliana, and I'm a student at the Institute of Classical Homeopathy.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm very glad you guys are doing this show, and I just wanted to say that I personally have what I feel is a non-biased view of the whole thing because I've been studying with contemporary homeopaths, and now I'm studying with classical homeopaths, and I have the honor of having Nicola as my teacher, which is wonderful. And I just have observed in case-taking that is done by contemporary homeopaths. And what I've found is that the biggest thing that they leave out is the totality of the case.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, they'll look at one symptom instead of all the symptoms, and mm-hmm. they'll expand on that one symptom. For instance, if somebody comes in with stomach pains and throat pain and vertigo and a whole list of symptoms, the homeopath, the contemporary homeopath, might look at the one symptom of the stomach pain and connect it with something else that the patient mentioned, such as stress at work and anger, and they'll immediately do some kind of psychoanalysis, which does not pertain to homeopathy, and come to the conclusion that this patient must be a colocentis because colocentis patients experience stomach pain after anger.
Forgive me, but I'm going to have to speed you up a little because we have our phone lines are just going nuts.
Anyway, that was one thing that's really
So it sounds like what you're saying is that people should make sure to choose somebody who doesn't get fixated on one symptom but looks at your entire picture.
Yeah, look at the totality.
Yeah.
That's only one that they've bypassed. But
there you go.
There's more principles.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
Thank you for sharing that with us. Okay. Let's move on to another caller. You're on the air with KPFA. This is Lena Berman. Do you have something for us?
Yes. This is Karen in Oakland, and I've been having dizzy spells for about 2 weeks. And I had some blood work done. My white blood cell count is good. I'm not anemic. And I'm running a slight fever. Just wondering what I can do,
I just need to remind you that when people are on the radio like this, it's very difficult to do a diagnostic. I mean, I think what Nikki was trying to tell you is that she can't, that you can't do anything without visualizing the person, talking to them, and getting a sense of their whole
mm-hmm.
person. So it sounds like one possibility is for you to look in one of Dana's books and get a sense of some... No, Dana's shaking his head.
There's nothing very simple that people can do for vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
That's a type of condition that really generally does require professional homeopathic attention. But I will make reference to one study that was done on vertigo generally, and it was done by one of Europe's leading ENT, which stands for ear, nose, and throat specialists. And they did use a combination of homeopathic medicines, a mixture. And even that was shown to be effective. This particular remedy is a series of homeopathic remedies.
And what they do in homeopathy, and here's where one of the differences between classical homeopathy and what might be thought of as modern or complex homeopathy exists. And I do want to make clear that I'm more of an advocate of classical homeopathy for treating chronic and deep problems. At the same time, just a short explanation of something in my own life, experiences that my wife has had. My wife and her five siblings have all have horrible allergies. And my wife has gone to a professional classical homeopath and probably has the least allergies of all her siblings, but she still gets them. Mm-hmm. And her homeopath recommends a single remedy based on her symptoms. But in fact, she finds that she gets better results when she uses one of the formula products for allergy. Now, this isn't to cure the allergy. The homeopath is slowly working on that. But in the process, when a person has a particular problem, you know, it drives you batty. You can't breathe. Mm-hmm. You need some type
of
relief.
So sometimes you have to go to a symptomatic
thing. That's right.
Caller, I want to thank you for your call. Thank you for your interest.
Thank you.
I mean, that's an interesting point. Is what you're saying is that it may sometimes be appropriate to experiment. Nikki looks a little skeptical.
The whole point about the principle of the single remedy and the single dose, it isn't just an idea. It isn't just a theory. Hahnemann, you know, proved it, and he practiced according to what he saw and what he experienced and what he saw in his patients, is that how we view a disorder is an imbalance, okay? And it means that you have to understand the principle of susceptibility, because we are only susceptible to a change, and the change is in our total body, okay, at any one moment, at any one time. And that's the skill of the homeopath, is to perceive that pattern of change and then match it with a remedy, okay, that also has those package of symptoms in it, and then apply it. Now, if you take more than one remedy, the problem is that how do you know which one's worked, okay?
And you just want something to work, though. It doesn't matter to the consumer.
If you did get an expert opinion on it, a remedy would work. It does mean what Hahnemann said.
Do all your patients get better?
Well,
all of them?
Well, so far so good. I have to cross my fingers. And
all
say
your students, your graduates. I mean, we have to be candid. Homeopathy doesn't work for everybody, and even you're the first homeopath that says that I've met that says 100% results.
If you prescribe accurately, according to the totality, and you practice according to the principles of homeopathy laid down by Hahnemann, your remedies will be effective because you've done it appropriately. You've got the individualistic characteristic symptoms, which are the identification marks that lead us to one remedy from another, and it works. I mean, I have to say it works.
Yeah. One thing that's interesting about
Hahnemann, we do need to move on to some other callers, but why don't you go ahead?
There's an important book that an Oxford scholar wrote who's a homeopath, and she was the first actually to go into Hahnemann's casebooks and actually see his patients, what he wrote about them, what he prescribed. And what she found has surprised all of us, in that during the last 10 years of his life, he gave usually two medicines to a patient in a day, one at a time, one in the morning and one at night. And this is very different than what he wrote. And so what he wrote as to what is classical homeopathy is actually different than the classical homeopathy that he actually practiced.
Okay. I think what we're really saying here is that in the end, when you're approaching a medical professional, they are a resource, and you do want to find someone you respect, and you want to take their advice seriously, but you don't want to put anyone's head over your own. In some cases, you want to also rely on your own sense and study as much as you can about some of this stuff, so you have some sense, I think, of it. Okay, we need to move on to some callers. Caller, you're on the air with KPFA. Do you have a question?
Yes, hi, my name is Deborah, and everything you're saying is really great. I really, in my mind, I think it's really wonderful. I did go to the Hahnemann Clinic. I suffer a chronic thing with headaches and fatigue that's been going on for years.
The Hahnemann Clinic, by the way, is a homeopathic clinic, and very good, high-quality classical homeopathic clinic in Albany.
Yeah. Right, and he interviewed me for a long time. He gave me a remedy to take right away, and then he gave me something to continue on a daily basis. What I found was, and I stopped all the camphor and everything he told me to do, you know, but what I found was that it wasn't working, and I was feeling worse. I thought maybe it was the crisis healing thing. I called him, and what he basically told me was, well, it sounds like it's not working, so stop and come in again. My question and my problem with this is the visit cost me $300.
Yeah.
The remedy cost me $65.
Mm. The remedy cost you $65?
$65. Mm. Now, okay, well, just come on in again. Well, for me, I'm sure. I'm a single mother, and sure. I've had to work with my diet. I'm doing macrobiotics, and the same with acupuncture. I've tried all these things. They work while I'm doing them, but then when I stop, basically, the symptoms come back again. They're not as bad now because I really have to work with my own stress level and my diet and all that.
Okay, let me let people respond to you.
Let me first of all say that homeopaths are specialists. In fact, often when you go to a medical specialist, and especially if a medical specialist spends the hour and a half or so with you, it is common that their fees equal that of a professional homeopath. But of course, remember, when you go to a homeopath, they encourage treatment, or they see you once every month or every third month, and the second visit is usually around between $50 and $75. So follow-up visits are much cheaper. Your annual cost of going to professional homeopath will be so much less than going to most other types of care, especially conventional medical care. So please don't be afraid of going back to the homeopath. One, it will be cheaper. Two, like Nikki and I have both been saying, is that this process is arduous. Finding the correct remedy is a very systematic process and sometimes requires several visits to find the one that fits you most accurately.
Okay, let's move on.
Oh, okay, I just wanted to say that, it shouldn't take you very long to find the accurate remedy if you've taken the case correctly. You've taken the case correctly and you've analyzed it classically, then it shouldn't take you a long time. And I think that homeopaths, professional homeopaths, are basically, or most of us, are in it to benefit people. And I myself would, obviously, at home I'd have a sliding scale of people, for price for people, so that it's those who can afford it and those who can't. It's just that I wouldn't like anybody not to be able to afford homeopathy because they can't afford it, okay? So I try and find ways around that.
Well, and to that end, though, what would you advise this woman to do? Because I've heard a lot of stories like this.
It's just like everything, I mean, there's a scale of fees, okay? And, some people charge a lot and some people don't charge a lot.
The Hahnemann is also the most expensive because it's not just a clinic.
It is a leading teaching
facility.
Yeah. Okay.
But our teaching facility runs a clinic and it's free.
Yeah, but you don't have any room for us.
No, we do our best.
Okay.
We do our best.
All right, let me just quickly ID the show for those of you who just tuned in. I'm sorry, the engineers are going, come on, take a call. This is Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. This is a show on homeopathy. You can call in. There are lines blinking. If you get a busy signal, you can try again. It's 510-848-4425. Caller, you're on the air with KPFA.
Hi. My name is Heather, and I have a question about... I also have taken my little baby to the Hahnemann Clinic and been very pleased. One thing that I'm interested in is homeopathic immunization. And the Hahnemann Clinic doesn't support that. They do regular old allopathic immunization in a sort of more moderate, informed dosage. But I was wondering if you could speak about homeopathic immunizations, what you know about it, and if you feel that they're effective. And that's my question.
Thank you for that. Very good question.
The point about homeopathy is that we treat symptoms. So when patients come to us, it is the assumption that they are experiencing something which is making them feel uncomfortable. And you can only apply a homeopathic medicine according to symptoms, because it is the symptoms that are the signs and the signals that something is wrong with you. It's the distress signal, it's the SOS of the body to say, something's wrong. If you've got symptoms, you can treat it. If you don't have symptoms, you don't treat it. It's as simple as that. So in other words, vaccination is a big issue for homeopaths. We treat symptoms.
So are you saying...
Let me be more precise about it. Rather than actually treating symptoms, we use symptoms. We use them to find the remedy that matches the person. You're not going to have the pertussis symptoms prior to actually being exposed to pertussis. So, in fact, homeopaths have found, and there's no evidence that homeopathic doses of pertussis or diphtheria or whatever pathogen... Once again, in homeopathic doses, will provide any preventive benefit. And so there's just no evidence. And I should say, now's not the time I'll get into it, but we haven't yet talked about the body of scientific research that there is in homeopathy in treating a whole variety of ailments, published in The Lancet, in the British Medical Journal, in the conventional medical journal in America called Pediatrics.
and several other just basic science journals, too. I had to at least...
I did want us to cover that at the beginning. So do I understand what you're both saying? You're saying that, Nikki, are you saying that you would prefer to see children not immunized?
It's a very difficult issue to talk about. What I'm saying is that it's the issue is prophylaxis. The issue is taking something before you actually get the symptoms. And I'm saying, you know, it's much more useful because, as Dana said, we work with symptoms. We've got to have the symptoms, and then you can treat the disorder.
So you're saying don't immunize for polio or tuberculosis, let the child get the...
I'm not saying that at all.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm certainly not
okay.
saying that.
Okay.
You need
anyway.
A whole program on immunizations.
On immunization.
I don't want to
I probably
overdo
should do
it
a
right
show
here.
On immunization,
but there
yeah.
is a very good resource, a book called The Immunization Decision.
Mm-hmm.
Though I do want to tell people that this book is going to come out in a new edition in about 4 months, and it's even changing its name to The Vaccine Guide. And that's going to have the most up-to-date review of the risks of getting immunized, the risks of not getting immunized, and letting the consumer decide what they want.
Okay.
It's not even a yes or no answer. It's like saying, do you support surgery? It's silly to be against surgery, and I think it's silly to be against immunization. You might be against certain immunizations, certain surgeries,
certain
and certain circumstances.
Yeah, with certain people. All right, well, I'm going to get that information from you, and I'll try to schedule a show on that from the guy that you
sure,
told me.
Sure, I would recommend
okay,
it.
Okay, let's move on to another caller. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question for us?
Yeah, my name is Jan, and I've been to a couple of different homeopathic practitioners, and what I get really confused about is if what Nikki was saying was that you don't repeat remedies, but I find that practitioners who say that they're classical do repeat remedies, and I wondered if she could talk about that or if Dana could, and because it's confusing to me.
Yeah, a little
bit
to me,
too. Are you talking
too.
About in an acute situation, Jan, or a chronic situation?
She's not there, so
okay,
go ahead
fine.
And answer her.
Okay.
In either.
It's different. Obviously, you do repeat a remedy in an acute situation because you have to race a disorder. If there's a fever, then you have to get ahead of it. You may also change the remedy according to the picture that is presented towards you. Okay. In a chronic condition, the constitutional treatment, if you're practicing classically, single dose, single remedy, and wait is usually the way to go around
okay,
it.
Okay, so you're saying in certain circumstances, with somebody gets a flu, you can treat repeatedly as the symptoms present. If the symptoms go away, you stop taking the remedy. If they represent, you can take it again.
That's right. Well, the picture may change. That's right.
Yeah, the trick is that there is controversy here in homeopathy because Hahnemann recommended the minimum number of doses.
And a minimum dose, too,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah,
smallest.
In size and also the number of doses. So although often it is best when it is just a single dose, sometimes in certain circumstances, some degree of repetition is necessary and useful. But the approach is always towards the minimum dose. And that's one of the things I like about homeopathy. It's a total non-obsession with treatment. And so all too often when you are doing nutritional things and you're always thinking about, well, what vitamin do I take now? When you're doing chiropractic, you often have to go once or twice a week. And this is very different in homeopathy.
Okay. Let's move on to another caller who got tired of waiting. Let's go to another one. You're on KPFA. This is Lena Berman.
Hi. My question concerns acute injuries to the skeletal system.
Okay. What's your question?
Strains.
Uh-huh.
How effective has homeopathy been in those kinds of injuries?
Now, what you're talking about specifically is not a chronic condition where you have a tendonitis. You're talking about, I fell down, I did this thing.
Well, it can turn into a chronic thing, like a ligament strain of the knee.
Yeah, but initially some kind of trauma.
Initially from a physical trauma.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's very good. I was out walking the other day with somebody, and they twisted their ankle incredibly badly, and to such an extent that she was screaming with the pain.
Ooh.
And so what happened was a 10M, which is a very high dose of a medication called Arnica.
M stands for 1,000, so it's been diluted 1 to 10, 10,000
mm-hmm.
times.
Okay, that's right. She took it, and just within a few minutes, the pain just subsided. Mm-hmm. And although the condition was went on for a while in terms of what was happening, the bruise came out in 2 or 3 days' time,
mm-hmm.
but she was up and running pretty quickly. You know, within an hour, this person suffered a severe strain, sprain, call it what you will, mm-hmm. in an agonizing agony, and took an Arnica, and away she went.
Arnica?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, that was
great. But Arnica is for shock. Arnica is a remedy specifically for shock and trauma
mm-hmm.
and bruising. And then this particular person then went on to another remedy more appropriate to her specific condition, a remedy called Rustox.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. which was specific to her totality, as we've been saying.
To the strain.
To the strain. Oh, okay.
It's almost specific for sprains.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In homeopathy, in fact, both my book, Everybody's Guide to Homeopathic Medicines, which I wrote with a physician named Steve Cummings, and my new book, The Consumer's Guide, have specific information beyond just Arnica and Ruth's talks for the whole variety of things.
Yeah.
But a colleague here, actually a sports physician in Hayward, who's one of the leading sports physicians in the country, is a man named Stephen Sabotnick. And he wrote an excellent book called Sports and Exercise Injuries. His subtitle is Conventional Homeopathic and Alternative Treatments, because he reviews the whole body of types of things that you can do. Though homeopathy is his greatest love and his greatest specialty. So it's full of really good information. Check out that book. If you can't find it in your local bookstore, then contact my company.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, thank you, caller. Okay, let's move on. Caller, you're on the air with Lena Berman. Do you have a question?
Yes. Let's see. Arnica came up, and I have a something interesting. It's very subtle. I notice that when I have taken Arnica and even the gel, that I notice that there is this, I experience on a subtle level, a depression or sadness along with taking that. And that also had a yoga instructor who was Russian who happened to say the same thing at some point in time, said, oh, yes, I have the same problem with Arnica. I was wondering if you knew anything about that.
I would say that it's wrong remedy at the wrong time. Oh. You didn't need the Arnica at the time. I can't really tell what was going on, but certainly if you have a condition whereby Arnica is the remedy, then it will be effective in a specific set of circumstances.
Okay.
I can't understand what's going on right now.
Right.
Well, one thing that's interesting is that a colleague of mine in New Mexico performs these drug provings where he gives to subjects in this experiment continual doses of a remedy until they develop symptoms. And in fact, 70% of the people develop symptoms, but 70% of the people develop symptoms during the first week when they're all given a placebo.
Yeah, it's
so
very
so you do have to recognize that sometimes our own expectations and just various unknown factors sometimes come in. Now, I'm not saying that this happens in this case, but the trick here would be for someone to give you a little bit of Arnica when you don't know it to see if you experience the same thing.
Mm.
And I'd be anxious. In fact, I'd love you to drop me a line to see if that happens, because although I don't know all the mental symptoms of Arnica, I don't think depression is a common one.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, caller. Okay, let's get a couple. It looks like we have time for maybe one more caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm calling about my three-year-old son. He is taking, he's been taking a medication called Recaltrol, and it's my understanding is that his body produces phosphorus but doesn't produce calcium. And so I was wondering how homeopathic medicine might be able to help him as an alternative to him having to take this medicine forever and ever. He has to get periodically checked to make sure that he has the correct calcium level and phosphorus levels in his body.
I would suggest that he seek the advice of a homeopath professionally, that he have his case taken, that it's analyzed in the correct way, and then the homeopath will be able to help him to a great degree.
Okay.
So that he doesn't actually have to continue taking the allopathic drugs, which I assume is what it is that you're talking about at the moment.
Okay.
Caller, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, before we run completely out of time, let me have you give your numbers out again, so, and then it'll be available at the front desk of KPFA. Nikki?
Okay, so the Institute of Classical Homeopathy, we run a training program for homeopaths. So if you want to come and study homeopathy, then give us a call on 707-963-7796. I'll repeat that for you. 707-963-7796. We'll be happy to hear from you.
Dana?
Nikki's a great teacher. I really do encourage people to seek out that school. Homeopathic Educational Services is on Blake Street near Shattuck at 2036 Blake Street. And our phone number, again, is 510-649-0294. That's 649-0294. And look us up in the phone book if you didn't get that, if you don't have a pen or pencil or your computer available.
Okay, we've got time for one more caller. Caller, you're on the air with... No, we do not have any call. We've decided that I was closing the show, so now I'm going to talk very slowly to close the show. I want to thank both of you very much for coming and sharing this time with us. Nikki, thank you so much for coming over from the North Bay, and Dana for being right here in Berkeley where we need you. I want to thank those of you that called in. There were some very good questions, and I want to remind you that next week, I'm holding the wrong piece of paper. This is really helpful. I guess I should also probably give some credit to my engineers who have been so patient, Jade Alburo and Kevin Cartwright, who do a beautiful job. If you have questions about exercise and diet and you want a consultation, or you want to purchase a cassette copy of today's show or get a list of other shows available on cassette, call my office during the week at 707-769-1458. Again, that's 707-769-1458. If you did not get the numbers of the guests, it will be available at the front desk of KPFA, and that's 510-848-6767. Next week, Tuesday at noon, I'll be back with my monthly exercise show. This one is called Getting Lean with Exercise, and I'll be talking to you alone about exercise and how it changes your body composition and retrains your metabolism so that you don't have to diet to stay lean or do exhaustive cardiovascular exercise, which will wear you out. As usual, you'll be invited to participate with your call, so don't miss that show next week. As always, I'm Lena Berman, and this has been your own health and fitness talk show on KPFA 94.1 FM. See you next week.